Track 8. We can turn around the fortunes of our wildlife. Our columnist looks back at a time when the rattling, scratching songs of wheat ears would have been a common spring sound in Norfolk.
The older I get, the more I love April. I've always been a fan, of course, for April is the month when spring, oh glorious riot of spring, begins to gather pace at last. It's just that in my youth I was more beguiled by heady May. In May, it seems to me the Norfolk landscape is at its finest. Everywhere you look or listen, there is life. Sweet flowers are begging to be visited by hoverflies and bees. Birds are caroling from every tree, and not a single leaf is blemished. In May, I cry for all the world to stop, for life to be the same forever. A few years ago, however, a dear friend said to me that April was his favourite month. How many perfect April days, he asked, are left in anyone's life? He's right. There is a sharp, clear quality of light to April's two rare sunny days, a sharp, clear green as birch buds break, a sharp, clear yellow as a brimstone busies by. Yes, April's sunny days are heavenly. Last month, as Norfolk Wildlife Trust reached its centenary, I recalled our founder, Sidney Long, and his love of wheat ears. A wheat ear, you may remember, featured on our Christmas card in 1939, honouring Dr. Long, who had died in January. Wheat ears are splendid things, especially on the sharp blue days of April. An adult female wheat ear is a bird of earthy brown, darkest in the cheek and wings. Below, she is a silvery buff, warming to butterscotch at the throat. The drama of her plumage is in her tail. Her rump and tail sides are the white of first day snow. Her tail ends in a thick black bar which creeps back to the centre of her rump to form a T. As she hops along a Norfolk beach in April or perches on a heathland post, she quivers her tail coquettishly, signalling she is back from Africa, that longer days and warmer nights have come. Her male is lovely too. His back is greyer than the female's, purer, dry slate grey. His wings are like the female's tail, tar black, as are his mask and cheek. Like hers, his tail is black and white. Like hers, it quivers every time he lands. Welcome, wheat ears. Welcome home this April. Thank you for the sun you bring. Thank you for the sharp blue days, for dark-edged bee flies and the willow warbler's song. Thank you for the hope you bring to hearts worn down by winter's months of gloom. My welcome home rings hollow, though. The wheat ears we see in April 2026 are merely passage birds. The first to come from March are likely bound for Scotland, where they become common moorland breeding birds. Later into May come Greenland birds. But at the time of Norfolk Wildlife Trust's foundation, and at the time of Sidney Long's death in 1939, wheat ears were still common breeding birds on brecks and heaths in Norfolk. Even when I first visited Breckland, late in the 1980s, wheat ears still bred at Wheating Heath. But for more than 30 years now, they have gone as Norfolk breeding birds. For more than 30 years, the rattling, scratching songs of wheat ears have not been heard in Norfolk. We tend to talk of species having disappeared as though it were their choice to leave, as though responsibility were somehow theirs. Heartless wheat ears, how could you abandon us? Deprive us of your April song. The truth, of course, is harder to bear. There's a smoking gun here, and it's in our hands. If we look back at Faden's map of Norfolk, published in 1797, we see vast tracts of heathland, commonland, and Breckland grassland, wheat ear habitat. Even in the 1860s, Henry Stevenson wrote of wheat ears in his Birds of Norfolk. A common summer visitant and breeds in Norfolk, met within the open parts of the county on heaths and common lands, or in the vicinity of gravel pits, and abounds on the sandy hills by the sea coasts. Almost all those habitats have gone now. With them have gone the stone curlews, grey partridges, red-back shrikes, great bustards, and the wheat ears that long peopled them. First came the Enclosure Acts, where once John Clare rhapsodised, unbounded freedom ruled the wandering scene, nor fence of ownership crept in between. Huge areas of land were forcibly taken into private ownership and farmed. Broken by the loss, Claire continued, "Now this sweet vision of my boyish hours, free as spring clouds and wild as summer flowers, is faded all, a hope that blossomed free and hath been once, no more shall ever be." Next came the First World War, after which huge areas of remaining heath and grassland were planted with non-native conifers to ensure we never again ran short of timber. And then the wholesale industrialization of agriculture in the mid-20th century. Almost all the habitat for breeding wheat ears and for countless other species was destroyed. What a cheery article this has turned out to be. My point, though, is about Sidney Long. He was the very antidote to helplessness and gloom. He saw a problem, development devouring the Norfolk landscape and its wildlife, and he acted. He founded a trust to save the last scraps of ancient habitat in the county and protect them for the future. We can shrug our shoulders at the loss of wheat ears as a Norfolk breeding bird. We can excuse ourselves and look away. Or we can stand with Sidney Long and with 100 years of staff at Norfolk Wildlife Trust, protecting our remaining shred of habitat in our county and, slowly, creatively, strategically, beginning to turn around the fortunes of our wildlife. For a century, we have depended on the generosity and support of Norfolk people for our work. This April, in our centenary year, and for a century more, we and our county's priceless wildlife count on you still.